Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we are an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And this is our 100th
Yay!
Full episode.
Yay! And that's, is that the first time you've done a perfect intro? So it celebrates 100 by being perfect.
Practically perfect in every way, as Mary Poppins would say.
If at first you don't succeed, try 100 times.
So, happy 100th.
Yeah, it's so exciting. Our fifth year, 100th episode.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
I'm nervous because the topic we're going to get in today is very heavy. Right now, I'm going to give you a huge trigger warning. There is a lot of talk of bad stuff. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
So if you're easily triggered, just tread lightly.
Yep. And for me, my second story is pretty heavy, but my first one is not. First one's actually very personal. I get to share a Cody story. I'm so happy.
And then for Creep of the Week, I end it with a little, at least uplifting news. That way we don't end on like so sad.
Death.
But that being said, the reason we're talking about all this awful stuff is because the topic
is this is one that has we knew we were going to do this eventually, and we finally, well, Chris was like let's just do it, like it's our 100th. We were talking about the satanic panic of the 1980s. This is something that both of us lived and breathed growing up.
Especially me growing up with an evangelical family, you know, in small town, especially in small towns.
Especially in small towns. That's a big part of it.
Which both of us grew up in,
Catholic in the Bible Belt in a small town. It was everywhere.
Throughout the 80s, and I will get into history a little bit as to how all that came about and stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting,
heavy, and I will also preface is that I have never been invested so much in research. Like, I came to tears a few times, and I might today because it's difficult.
Yeah, I think Chris told me, I think you have a story that you're telling it in two parts. So you have one story, and it's something I've heard of, but I don't know a lot about. And Chris was texting me, and he was like, I can't with this. Like, this is the craziest, most invested thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I am going to toot my own horn, but this is probably the best research I've ever done as well.
Good. And you're allowed to. We all have that moment where we're like, I just dove because this was so much to me.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing some weird, like some extraneous research that I'll talk about in my first story as well.
Yeah, that you texted me about.
Yeah, absolutely. That I was texting Chris. So with that, should we get into our drinks?
Since you already saw half of what I was going to reveal anyways, I will go first.
Go for it.
So I was looking up non-alcoholic, obviously, devil drinks or Satan drinks today, and I found something called Devil's Piss. And what the original recipe is, it was Corona with grenadine in it. But
ew, so it's like bloody piss.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I did my own take. They didn't have any non-alcoholic Mexican lager where I went, so I just used a different beer. I made a granita out of the beer and jalapeno, and then I put grenadine in it.
Oh, I need a sip of this.
It's spicy as fuck.
Is it? I need spicy.
Yeah.
I need spicy. I'm trying this. Oh, oh my God. Oh, it burns. Oh, that is delicious. That is burning. That's spicy. Oh,
and
that's good.
And then on top of that, I got Cody a gift because it goes with the show, with the topic. So here's a can of
deviled ham spread.
So you're taking that home. I bought that as a joke just because it related.
I did not know that it was a spread. Oh my God. And the devil's on there like dancing like, hi, this is disgusting. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to try it.
Yeah, so, just try it and then throw it.
Yeah,
then keep the wrapper as a memory.
I will. I'll leave it here, and we can decorate with it. So I got, I had a little
rationale.
Moment.
Well,
rationale, but it's good. I think it works.
Cody had Murphy's Law moment on the way here. He almost didn't make it tonight. So
God, it was the universe did not want me here. Yeah. What if it was Satan being like, "Don't talk about me like this." Or something. I don't know.
The powers that be, whoever they be.
Yeah, whoever they be, we're like, we don't want this to happen. But I ended up getting a sangria, and I was like, yay.
Blood?
Oh, like
sacrifice.
Blood. Oh, because it's like blood, and it's like sacrifice.
I just rationaled for you.
The end. No, because this hits so close to home, it's called House.
Oh, good.
And it has a picture of a house on it.
So with that, should we get into history?
Yep, well, I taste this thing.
All right. So the Satanic Panic, also known as Satanic Ritual Abuse Scare, has a long, sordid, and involved history going back to the 1970s with obvious influence from occult teachings from even earlier than that. And depending on who you ask, it's still very much alive today. At its most basic, it was a type of moral panic or
mass hysteria.
Yes.
Yes.
In which there was a widespread fear in which Satanism was blamed for a number of murders, assaults, and pretty much any bad thing they could potentially blame on the religion.
Yep. I'm curious for people who were younger and didn't live through the 80s hear about, which is most of them, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you a story. Last night, I was talking to my friend Lauren about our next topic, and she's like, what's the Satanic Panic? She grew up in the 90s, so I will tell you as it gets into the 90s here, but she didn't really know. I had to explain it to her.
That's so cool, and people are going to be like, this was really a thing? Yeah. And it was.
Yep. So there have been conspiracies, much like the Illuminati, of satanic cults having members from wealthy and powerful elite world leaders that have been accused of child abduction and or grooming for all things malevolent, you know? It has been suggested that there were a number of factors that have contributed to the interest and fear of the occult and Satanism during the late 1960s and 70s, following the unfortunate events that resulted from one cult leader.
Really?
Charles Manson.
Oh, so this kind of spawned from?
Kind of, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Around the same time, so.
Interesting.
As I say here, fuck him and everything he stands for.
For real.
But I digress. Not too long after the infamous murders, occultist Anton LaVey published the Satanic Bible, which was his own personal philosophy, more so than a Bible or a guide. A lot of what was in the Satanic Bible were his other philosophers' writings, so needless to say, he kind of plagiarized some stuff, not everything.
You know? Okay.
That being said, his philosophy became the Manual for the Church of Satan, which he had founded in 1966 prior to writing it.
Now, this is the Church of Satan that's actually more atheist, or is this actually worshiping?
Yeah, this is like the dark church.
Oh, the dark one. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. Again, we are armchair experts.
Yep.
We don't know everything, so I could be off, but yeah.
Probably. No, I'm just kidding.
No, probably. I'm not too fond. Of course, I still have religious trauma, so I'm still a little scared to look into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Every time I type like Satan or satanic into my search browser, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A few years later, a very famous book and movie claiming to be based on a true story would add further fear to all things Satan, The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
These were just the precursors of what was yet to come. Enter the 1980s, the decade of the war on traditional and moral values. Reagan was president, Nancy was saying no to drugs, MTV was birthed, and so on. It was in 1980 when a book called Michelle Remembers was published that extreme interest and fear began to rise. I own this book. Actually, Cody has it right now. I haven't read it yet, but that being said, this book was by Lawrence Pazder and was at the time said to be a memoir, but since then has been proven to be false.
Uh-huh.
It detailed the ongoing ritual abuse of one Michelle Smith, who was first the patient and later the wife of the author as well as the co-author. She was also the co-author of the book.
Okay.
In the book, Lawrence, a psychologist, performed past life regression, which is completely controversial. sessions on Michelle in which she alleged abuse from the Church of Satan that supposedly even preceded LaVey's own church and teachings.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this is the book that gave religions a soapbox to speak on against the Church of Satan. Although the book was often debunked, it was too late because they were already circuit tours, talk shows, and so on, further perpetuating fear in the minds and hearts of religious America.
From this book?
Yep.
I don't remember this book at all.
Yeah, they were on like Donahue and what? Like Oprah.
Holy shit. You would think I would have known this.
Yeah. Myself, growing up in a, again, partially evangelical family, I can clearly remember a lot of that fear being instilled in me.
So do you remember the book back then? Or hearing about it?
I don't, but I took an interest, not in a bad way that I want to become a Satanist, but just like the occult, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember reading about it, but not actually reading it. So.
He's wearing his occult nose ring right now, by the way.
With so much exposure, Lawrence Pazder became the satanic ritual abuse expert. And I use that loosely. And the novel, as I call it, almost became like a sort of guide for lawyers and others involved in cases of supposed satanic ritual abuse. Let me say here that I am not discounting that any abuse took place, more so that it was not likely due to Satanism or occult reasons.
Oh, yeah.
There is one particular famous criminal case known as the McMartin Preschool Trial that used satanic ritual abuse as evidence throughout the cases, but I won't go into detail because it's long and horrible. So be advised if you do some research on that yourself. Like all, quote, good novels do, Michelle remembers gave birth to a number of other, quote, true accounts of satanic ritual abuse, furthering the already lingering fear amongst society. Call it satanic fanfic, if you will. If not already claimed, I'm taking credit for that term.
I like that.
As America began to pull Satanism out of the dark, so to speak, it became mainstream. It was in movies, books, and TV, such as Geraldo Rivero's 1988 special, Exposing Satan's Underground. To be clear, this was not just an American thing. The panic had and has spread worldwide. Between 84 and 86 alone, around 26 people were convicted on the basis of satanic ritual abuse, many of which have since then have been rightfully overturned. A satanic panic would take a lull in the 90s, but has been so instilled in our culture that today some compare it to QAnon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's so much more I could obviously talk about, but I think for now that about covers it.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't know that it actually kind of had these singular roots. I thought it was just kind of this thing that just exploded out of 40 different places, but it actually kind of has a beginning, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and if you think of the newest Conjuring movie,
yeah,
that's about a case in court that was the devil made me do it.
Yeah, so are we getting into story time?
Yes.
All right.
Be prepared, everybody. Again, trigger warning.
Yeah, except for this first one. This first one's fun, kind of. Okay, so as we mentioned before, we both grew up in this. And for people who didn't live in the 80s...
Not in the satanic cult.
Yeah, the satanic, we all grew up in the satanic cult. You know what we're talking about. But for people in the 80s, so I grew up in Pampa, in the Bible Belt. And I actually didn't know the phrase satanic panic until you told it to me.
Oh, really?
But I didn't know that was like, it was actually a coined thing.
Yeah.
But once you said it, I start thinking back and I'm like, oh my God. Like whenever I was growing up, anyone who was weird or different or we just wanted to make
fun
of.
They wore black or they dyed their hair black.
They were a devil worshiper. And that's absolutely all you talked about. We would be in Pampa and mom or whoever, we would see someone and be like, oh, they're definitely a devil worshiper. They're a devil worshiper. Everyone was a devil worshiper.
And then goth fashion was uprising too. So that also
that's true.
Was comparative too.
Yeah, absolutely. It was almost like a form of McCarthyism where someone was shunned because people started spreading rumors that they were a devil worshiper. And it became so weird. And then it spread to that thing where if you played records backwards, that they would say, you know.
Backmasking.
Yeah, and they would say satanic things. And I mentioned this before, that growing up, we would have different records. And the biggest one was Radio Gaga by Queen. And we actually ruined the record by getting it on the player and going like forcing it backwards and the needle scratching the shit out of it. And it's making all these horrible noises.
Yeah.
And of course, being impressionable kids, we were like, I just heard, you know, the devil rules. And we, of course, heard something.
Did your mom catch you?
Oh, she was a part of it.
Oh, are you kidding me?
My mom was so strange. She was really cool and
really religious
in some ways, but in some ways super religious. Like with that music thing. she knew that that wasn't a thing.
She knew that it was fake.
Yes.
That people were talking shit.
And so she was fine with us. She never actually stopped us from...
If I were her, I'd be pissed that you're ruining record.
That's what she, because we were poor. That's what she should have been mad about.
Yeah.
Here's your record, Mom.
But she's probably like, I want you kids to know that this shit isn't real.
Yes. But of course, we're like, it's so real.
Yeah.
But the biggest one, and this is the story I'm going to be talking about today, is a place by where I grew up called Screaming Wells.
So is that the link that I sent you the other day?
It was not. That's my second story. So this is a really interesting story because there was a place outside of Pampa and there were a bunch of oil wells. And they're actually rigs, but for some reason that's the country term.
Screaming?
We call them oil wells.
Wells?
Yeah, but the place is called Screaming Wells.
That's creepy.
Oh, it's so creepy because this is how it got its name. Supposedly, going by there times of day, you would hear screaming. And it could be at night, during the day. It would come from different places out in Screaming Wells. But here's the kicker. That part is true. The place actually screams. You will hear screaming when you go out there.
Is it the machinery?
So we're going to talk about that in debunk.
Oh.
But there were also a bunch of what appear to be concrete tombs out there. So naturally, screaming coming from all over the place. Concrete tombs. You're in a small town during Satanic Panic.
Oh my God.
This place blew up. In our hometown, in the whole panhandle during the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a place of pure evil. It was supposed to be a place of Satanism. Everyone heard the rumors that you never go to Screaming Wells because devil-worshipping rituals are happening out there.
And then with the name with that, that just perpetuated the fear further.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so it became a place where the cool kids wanted to go and be cool. The young kids avoided it like the plague because of what was supposedly happening out there. It was supposed to be sacrifices and rituals and all the things. So I thought it was massive. But when I started researching this, I looked at this months ago.
Oh, really? Settled on a topic?
Yeah, because when you brought up Satanic Panic at one point, I
lent you the book, probably.
Yeah, and it is, because I actually was avoiding the topic because I was like, well, I can't find anything on Screaming Wells, and I'm Google searching, and so I don't want to do this topic if I can't talk about it. And I was like, how the fuck does my brain blow this thing up and there's nothing out there? So I found a Pampa Facebook group. I went ahead and posted, hey, I'm doing a podcast. Does anybody remember or have stories about Screaming Wells? Y'all, this thread blew the fuck up. The last time I checked, there were 111 comments to my post.
And that is blowing up because your town is like this big.
Yeah, it's zero. Yeah. And it was literally people tagging people saying like, oh shit, this place was crazy. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a few of the comments that I got.
Okay.
And what people saw. So first of all, 80% approximately of people responded with some variation of, we were always told there were devil worshippers out there. Mm-hmm. Or it was just outside of town and people said that satanic rituals went on there. Yeah. And let me preface this by saying, whenever I made my post, I didn't mention Satanic Panic at all. All I said was, I'm doing a paranormal podcast. But most people remember that this is where Satanism happened. Uh-huh. Now, I thought, though, that it was just rubbish. Like, nothing really happened except people partying. Yeah. But listen to a couple of these comments.
Okay.
And these people, and I went back and forth with a couple of them, and they're like, this is absolutely true. One said, one time we saw people being creepy outside there in the middle of the night. They all stood in a circle holding candles. I never went home so fast in my life. Someone said, went out to Screaming Wells once and never again. We parked and walked towards lights that we could see. Eventually, we saw a fire, and there were people chanting and dancing around the fire. We ran for our lives, and they said, we hauled our heinies out of there as fast as we could. Suddenly, lights came after us, but we were able to get out of there faster, apparently, and lost them.
Wow.
Super creepy. So I'm reading, and this was a lot of people saying stuff like this. So I was like, people actually saw something that appeared to be rituals out there. Like, yeah. I don't think they're making it up with this number. But now it gets gruesome.
Oof.
The sacrificed animals was a thing.
Of course. That was found a lot everywhere.
I received so many comments to this thread about that. And let me read a couple. One person said, there was a roller coaster bridge out there where they said satanic rituals were held and goats were sacrificed. And they say you can go under the bridge and hear the spirits of those goats crying. And I was like, oh, well, that's odd. That sounds kind of like a ghost story.
Uh-huh.
But then someone else posted, and this is in Pampa where 4-H is massive.
That's like the biggest thing to do in the town.
Yes. That way, whenever you were in 4-H, I was not, because I wasn't country.
Oh, because you're too Catholic.
I was too Catholic.
Too involved in church.
And my parents moved from Germany to all over the country to Texas, so they weren't natural
farmers or anything farmers, like that.
Yeah. So 4-H, if people don't know, it's a place where people do the show pigs and show cows, and they do roping and all that country stuff. And it's fine.
You earn badges. You earn,
yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And it's actually, I'm not knocking
it's agricultural study, basically, for kids.
There you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So one of the comments was, one of my friend's show pigs disappeared, and if I remember right, they found it sacrificed out at Screaming Wells.
Ugh.
Well, someone responded with, they sacrificed dogs too. We went out there and we found two dead dogs that had been hung in the trees.
Mm.
Seriously disturbing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm already like,
you're like, should I take this comment or this post off?
Well, I'm like, these people are like, they honest. Like, they're not, I feel like they're not lying. I did not expect to hear that they actually found animals. And then someone responded to that, I used to find slaughtered dogs and goats out there when I was younger. If we were out past dark, my mom and dad always told me if we ever saw people there to run away and come straight home.
Good.
So there's people saying, we found slaughtered and mutilated animals out at Screaming Wells. We saw people chanting and dancing and doing rituals out at Screaming Wells.
I will debunk right now. Chupacabra.
I wish. Wouldn't that be awesome if one paranormal explanation was rationalized by another paranormal explanation? I hope that was it. So I'm going to stop there. If people want to hear more, they can reach out. But the bottom line is this. I was really surprised at what I found. I thought I would just hear some stories that were like, okay, they just saw people messing around and this isn't true. But some of this stuff was like, I don't know why seven people would all say,
oh, yeah, I saw that. Oh, yeah, I saw that. You reminded me of this.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Wow. So that is the story of Pampa and Screaming Wells.
Wow. So, all right. Well.
Okay. Let me get myself prepared for this.
Yes. You get yourself emotionally prepared. And if you're not, generally everybody I'm speaking to, not just Cody, if you're not angry as I was by the end of this, then you have no heart.
Oh, God. I've got to get. Okay. Then I've got at least fake being mad.
As I hinted earlier, I have become totally invested in this story and even became emotional, like I said earlier. As our listeners know, I'm a proud social justice advocate, and that is why I feel it is important that I tell the story. I've omitted some details, as this could have easily been a 3 or 4 part story. I'm talking about the West Memphis 3. This will be in 2 parts, like Cody said, so I'll get right to it. The West Memphis 3 are 3 men who at the time of their conviction were teenagers, Damian Eccles, Jesse Miskelly Jr., and Jason Baldwin. The 3 victims of the story were Steve Edward Brandt, also called Stevie, Christopher Mark Byers, and James Michael Moore. I'll talk about all 6 as I believe they are all victims that deserve to have their stories told. First, Steven, Christopher, and Michael were a trio of best friends who were in 2nd grade and had earned their wolf rank in the local Cub Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
Steve was a typical 8-year-old boy with blonde hair, standing at 4 feet and weighing 65 pounds.
It was me. This could be me. I had all these things.
He was raised by his mother after his parents divorced when he was very young. He was an honor student who lived with his mother, stepfather, and younger half-sister. Christopher, also 8 years old, had light brown hair, was 4 feet tall, weighing in at 52 pounds. Much like Stevie, his parents also divorced early in his life, with his mother remarrying. He lived with his mom, his stepdad, and an older stepbrother. His mother said that he was a typical 8-year-old who still believed in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. Yeah.
Oh, God, you keep saying was, and so I'm like, okay, something really bad is going to happen.
James, the 3rd of the victims, was 8 years old, had brown hair, standing at 4'2" and weighing 55 pounds. He is very proud to be a Cub Scout and often wore his uniform when he was not participating with the Scouts. Of the trio, it was said that James was the leader of the group. He lived with his parents and his older sister. In West Memphis, Arkansas, the 3 8-year-old boys...
West Memphis, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is not in West Memphis.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad I heard that.
Not in Tennessee.
Yeah, no. Not in Tennessee.
Yeah.
I almost said Kentucky.
Yeah.
Ugh.
In West Memphis,
Kentucky.
Arkansas, the 3 8-year-old boys were reported missing on May 5th, 1993. It was reported by three neighbors that prior to their disappearance, the three children had last been seen playing together. After calling out for his son and him not returning home after 30 minutes, Christopher Byers' stepfather made a report to the police. There was a small initial search that night by the police and friends and neighbors to no avail.
Oh, no.
The next day, a more thorough search began all over West Memphis with emphasis on Robin Hood Hills, where the children were last seen. They came up with nothing at first, but 5 hours into the search, a parole officer saw a boy's black shoe floating in a creek that led to Robin Hood Hills, prompting them to search the creek, which revealed the bodies of the three missing children.
All three of them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck.
You may want to skip ahead about 30 seconds to a minute here, as I'm going to give slight details that will be very disturbing. The boys had been stripped naked and hogtied with their own shoelaces. Their clothing was found close by. Of the clothing, two pairs of underwear were never found. Lacerations and genital mutilation had been found on one of the victims. Although very violent crimes, there was very little evidence to be found. There was a lack of blood or fibers, and it looked as if the area had been cleaned. With such little evidence, the police had not much to go on, you know?
Oh, my God.
Autopsies later revealed that Christopher Byers had died of multiple injuries, while Steve Branch and Michael Moore had succumbed to multiple injuries and drowning. The wounds on Christopher were thought to have been from a knife attack, and his genital mutilation was said to be done purposefully.
Fuck.
It was believed that all three victims were assaulted and killed in the place that they were found. Due to the state of the children that the children were found in, and considering the time period and where America was as a nation, rumors started to spread that these killings were due to satanic rituals. The reason that this was believed was due to the nudity, the positioning of the bodies, and more specifically, the genital mutilation. This theory would loom large throughout the case, despite other theories that were presented. And now on to the suspects. First, there was Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., 17 years old at the time of his arrest. He was said to have a bad temper and often got into fights with other kids at school, which he eventually dropped out of. Jason Baldwin was 16 when he was arrested. Previously, he had been arrested for vandalism and shoplifting. Despite that, he got very good grades in school and was said to be talented in drawing and sketching, so much so that one of his teachers had urged him to pursue graphic design in college. Now, Jason was a close friend of Damien Echols. Damien Echols was 18 at the time of his arrest, and he, like Jason, had been previously arrested for vandalism and shoplifting. Both he and Baldwin were friends based on their similar interests and tastes, especially a shared taste in music, which will become important later.
Oh, okay.
And their thoughts for the dislike of the culture in the Bible Belt, like most people.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Damien's family was poor, and he rarely attended school, resulting in him eventually dropping out, much like Jesse. Echols was said to have spent some time in a psychiatric facility, information which would later be used in court. And I'll leave that there as part one of this sad
and
important story.
That was a cliffhanger deluxe.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Oh, those poor children.
All six of them, believe
all
me.
Six.
Wait till you get to the end of the story and you'll see why.
All I know from this is, so I love South Park. You know, that was my, I used to dream about Trey Parker, and not in a sexual way.
I was just going to ask.
I set that up. I used to hero worship him because I thought he was so brilliant. Mm-hmm. I would dream about just meeting him and then pitching him an idea and him loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like an orgasm to me because I thought he was so brilliant. And I remember watching them being awarded something back in the 90s, and they were still new. And they walk up on stage, and for their speech, they said, "Free the West Memphis Three," and they walked off the stage.
And that was it.
And that's all I know of that story. But because they're so smart, I was like, well, they've got to be on. They got to know something.
Yeah. I didn't put in my research. I kind of omitted a detail, but I'll talk a little about that. Remind me a little bit about the celebrities and stuff.
Okay. So, oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. All right. So my second story, I mean, this is again, like, real and kind of heavy, but Chris, this is so fascinating. So Chris sent me this random link, and he was like,
"I didn't read this."
He didn't. He's like, "I didn't read this,
but it's in Texas, so take a look."
Yep. And
I have to give you a huge thanks because this is a story that took place in Childress, Texas, of all fucking places. And I saw that.
Why of all fucking places?
Well, because this is a nothing town. And I'm not trying to knock
even
it.
Even smaller than Pampa?
Pampa was 12 to 14,000 people in the panhandle. Childress is 4,800 people down further south in the middle of nowhere. It is a nothing town.
Like one stoplight town.
One stoplight town. It is a nothing town. Okay. So when I saw this article about satanic rituals in Childress in the 80s, I was like, well, this is going to be something really boring because it's Childress.
And you're like, and then you read it.
Holy fuck, y'all. This shit is insane. This story, and I had to cut, and this is long. Oh, yeah. I had to cut a bunch of it.
Oh, I know that feeling.
So strap yourselves in, buckle up for this.
Oh, as if they already weren't from listening to my story.
I know, right? They're already on edge. Yeah. And now they get to hear. But this is just wild. Okay. Oh, sitting out in Childress County in the U.S., state of Texas, is the town of Childress. It is known as a quiet, conservative town. Yes.
Surprise.
Yep. And in the 1980s, it was the same. I've driven through, every time I drive or used to drive from Dallas to Amarillo, you drive through Childress every single time. And that's where you know you're getting closer to Amarillo.
Amarillo.
And Childress has got a population of around 5,000 people. And really, it was just a little slice of small town America. It's nothing like, happened.
Like American as apple pie.
Yes. American as apple pie.
Yeah.
Wait.
That's an idiom.
Oh, I did it backwards. I was like, no, the saying is as apple pie is American. And I was like, that's wrong. But then on July 26th.
Damn, your face just dropped when you said, and
this
then.
This gets crazy. On July 26th, 1988. A gruesome discovery was made just outside of town. Mm-hmm. There, hanging from a tree and twisting in the breeze, was a lifeless body of 17-year-old Tate Roland. Mm-mm. Upon finding the body, the boy who had made the discovery, a friend of Tate's by the name of Chad Johnston, immediately informed the dead boy's parents. Fuck. Shortly after this, Chad would admit that the two had been out drinking. But then here's where it gets weird. Chad said that suddenly Tate, from out of nowhere, just climbed onto the tree and hung himself.
Bullshit.
Well, after a thorough investigation, the sheriff's department labeled it a suicide.
I call it bullshit.
Was the end of that. So then during the funeral, a young man began to go into a trance-like state and chant suicide over and over and over again until he was asked to leave. So he just goes into a trance, suicide, no. During the funeral. A woman appeared wearing a veil that nobody could recognize, she left before anybody could talk to her.
The woman in black.
Yeah, it's like the woman in black. And after this, more strangeness would follow when police found a cow skull set within a pile of rocks near where his body was found hanging.
I'm like, you're in Texas. You're going to find a lot of cow skulls.
That's true. Basically, it's weird if you don't find a cow skull. Yeah. But maybe arranged like that. But then in town, they started finding burning crosses. Dogs that would disappear and turn up mutilated in a ritual fashion.
Was this the KKK?
This is something that honestly I don't know.
Well, also these are assuming I'm non-melanated boys, correct?
Non what?
White boys.
Oh, all white boys. I'm sure it's all white boys. Okay. But before long, there of course became murmurs of satanic cults and human and animal sacrifices, and there were speculations that Tate Roland's death had been linked to this. Now, these rumors were accompanied by some really bizarre reports being made at the time. One report said that Satanists were in the area in a van trying to abduct blonde-haired, blue-eyed children.
Free candies and puppies.
Yeah, for free I'm so gullible for candies and little puppies.
Or you'd be kittens.
Yeah, I would be. Oh, Thai food and kittens. I mean, I'd get in that van now. But then there were stories of Satanists meeting at abandoned houses. This was classic satanic panic. Like, that's what I grew up with.
Everything
was satanic. It was textbook. There you go.
Yeah.
Then a very bizarre report came in from a group of teenagers who had gone up to visit Tate's grave out of morbid curiosity, only to see pentagrams scrawled everywhere and to be chased away by a group of Satanists in a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Even more disturbing was a 15-year-old local boy by the name of Ray Wilkes, who claimed to be a part of the cult and said that they were there on the night Tate hanged himself.
What?
Yeah. Now, the police apparently proved that that wasn't true, and over the months, these things were written off and things appeared to have calmed down.
Yeah.
Then on the morning of May 31st, 1991, Tate's older sister, the guy who hanged himself, his older sister, 22-year-old Terry Trosper, was found dead in her own bed after a night of drinking with friends.
Fuck that.
Now, she suffocated in her own vomit is what happened, but ugh. But in her system was found to be high amounts of a psychiatric drug called Elavil. And this is important to remember.
It's a antidepressant, but it also helps with sleep and it'll knock you the fuck out.
There you go. There you go. Now, while her death was explainable, a lot of people were saying that there's a link because there weren't a lot of deaths in this town of young people. So they're like, you know, how could this be a coincidence? In the meantime, the sheriff of Childress County, Claude Lane, he adamantly denied that there was any foul play involved, and he kept squashing rumors of Satanism, It wasn't until he lost his position due to allegations of selling marijuana that this case would be looked at again. Mm-hmm. Now, the new sheriff would re-examine the case and made the startling discovery that while all this had been going on, Wilkes, that kid who claimed to have been in that cult and was present, he tried to commit suicide. And his blood was also found to have high levels of Elavil. And he left a note behind reading, "I know something that the cops don't know.
Yeah.
I know who killed Terry. I can't live anymore." Ugh. He recovered and claimed to have not remembered a thing. So all this shit's going on. The new sheriff decides to have Tate's body exhumed for another examination. Sure enough, found levels of Elavil found in his remains. Now, at the time, the coroner would state his belief that this was not a suicide. Yeah. So the first sheriff who's selling marijuana all over the place says this was a suicide. Now they're like, nope, something nefarious is going on. They dug up Terry Trosper's body, the girl who choked in her own vomit. Yeah. This time, they found contusions and bruises on her body, as well as evidence that she had been smothered before her death.
This whole thing is so sus.
Isn't this? It's so sus. Now, here's the shit. You ready for the ending here?
Yeah.
No one has ever been found guilty of any foul play in the deaths of Kate Rowland and Terry Trosper, and the official original causes of death now remain. Neither has there ever been found any concrete evidence of cult activity in the town of Childress, and the whole case remains completely murky and
unsolved.
Impenetrable and unsolved.
So if you're not angry about that.
Oh, no.
But before I get into my second half of the story, as you all know, I'm very open about my own mental health, you know, and I was actually prescribed Elavil at one time.
Oh, really?
It's a medication that came out in like the 60s or 70s, so it's not very good to prescribe anymore. Anyways, when I took it, it would knock me out flat.
Interesting.
Know? And so groggy the next morning. So they took me off of that because it was just too heavy for me.
That's interesting. I wonder if it could have a side effect of hallucinations or anything. Night walking or sleeping.
The Shadow Man.
Night sturbation.
No, like the Shadow
Man. Oh, like Slender Man.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Like the Top Man. Top Hat Man.
Top Man.
Bottom Man. Sorry. I know. Shadow Peep, the Shadow Man, or whatever.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Why can't we remember it? Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Well, make us angry.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So I've told you about the victims, all six victims, as I will call them.
Okay.
Now on to the investigation and trial.
Oh, no.
The police said they thought that the crimes were cult-related since Damien Eccles was known to have an interest in the occult. He was thought to be a suspect. Also, for whatever reason, they felt he was capable of child murder. Because
he vandalized something.
Yeah.
Of course, he could be a murderer.
Sounds more like a shitty, unfounded opinion, but I digress. Nichols was taken for questioning and even took a polygraph test, denying he had done anything the whole time. According to this test, it supposedly showed that he may have lied, but your nerves will make that shit move.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've always been said I'd be terrified of a criminal lie detector because you start like your brain
shake,
just fucks with you.
You sweat, you know? Yeah. So they said that. Additionally, as Nichols was being interviewed, he mentioned the mutilation, which was enough for the police to incriminate him. About a month later.
Because he just mentioned it?
Yeah, that he talked about it. Not like at length, but he mentioned it in some fashion.
You know? But like that shit spreads.
Yeah,
so,
and that's what they later believe that it was. Little, he heard about it on the media.
In those little towns or something? Okay, okay.
About a month later, Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. was questioned, despite him having a known intellectual disability and being a minor. His stepfather did give permission for him to be taken in, but never agreed to him being questioned.
But he was anyway?
Yep.
Oh, shit.
During the 12-hour interview...
Of a child?
Yes. He was basically coerced into a confession, and yeah, after the initial quote-unquote confession, Eccles and Jason Baldwin were arrested.
12 fucking hours.
Yeah.
You could get a confession out of any minor in 12 hours because they don't know... They don't know better.
So they were the other two boys were arrested at this time. 8 months after that confession, Miss Kelly made another confession against his lawyer's advice. In comes a new witness, Vicky Hutchinson, who Miss Kelly babysat for and who took a polygraph test on the day the boys' bodies were found on an unrelated allegation. Her son was with her that day, who happened to be a friend of the missing boys, and casually had mentioned that the boys had been murdered, and when further pressed, said that the boys had been murdered by Satanists that spoke Spanish.
Oh my God, Spanishists.
Yeah. That being said, he could not, of course, not keep his story straight, nor was he able to identify any of the three suspects, even in a lineup.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Oh, my God.
This information leaked out to the media, of course, for further perpetuating that these incidents were satanic ritual related.
Oh, my God.
About a month later, Hutchinson agreed to put hidden mics in her home in hopes of further incriminating Damien Eccles. Hutchinson and Eccles met, but she states he made no statements about the incident. The police claimed the recording was inaudible, despite Hutchinson saying that it was. Hutchinson later told the police that not long after the murders, her and Eccles had attended a Wiccan meeting and that Eccles had bragged about the murders. Despite that, she was unable to say where the meeting took place, nor could she name any of the other attendees.
Oh my God.
Later, she would confess that she had turned the suspects in to avoid facing charges for her own pending allegations and to collect the reward money put up for the murders.
Bitch.
Absolutely.
She like ruins lives doing that. Okay.
As a result of Miss Kelly's confession, all three suspects, as I said, were arrested.
Oh my God.
After being arrested, Miss Kelly started to backpedal, but the damage had been done.
Oh yeah.
The suspects remained in custody. During the preparation for the trial, blood was found on a knife that belonged to Chris Byer's stepfather, which the father conveniently gave away not long after the murders. Although the blood was determined to belong to Byers, the police did not look further into this.
Like, they actually have something real there to go off of.
The police also failed to follow up on an incident in a restaurant when a man covered in mud and blood went into the restaurant, leaving blood in the bathroom the night the boys went missing.
What the fuck?
The police did take samples, but did nothing with it, and then later conveniently lost the evidence.
Shit.
Miss Kelly was tried separately from the other two suspects since he had made the confession directly to the police. Despite inconsistencies in Miss Kelly's story, as well as an indication of coercion, he was convicted by the jury of one count of first-degree murder and two counts of second-degree murder, resulting in a sentence of life plus 40 years in prison.
Holy shit.
The other two suspects were tried a month later. During that trial, so-called cult expert was brought in indicating that the two men's music collections and clothing indicated they were part of a satanic cult.
Whoa.
Yeah. After a lengthy trial, Eccles and Baldwin were found guilty on three counts of murder, resulting in a death sentence for Eccles.
Shit.
And life in prison for Baldwin.
Because Eccles was 18?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Following the initial trials, the defense teams tried to appeal the cases many times, stating trial misconduct in all three cases.
Just misfuckery all over the place.
Yep. Providing new evidence and challenging previous evidence. The foreman of the jury was said to be in violation as well after it was found out that he had discussed the case with his personal lawyer at length.
Oh my God.
With new evidence, a new hearing was secured. Now fast forward to 2007.
I don't want to.
With new advances in DNA, luckily.
Oh.
Testing, DNA collected from the crime scene was tested, which all failed to match the three alleged criminals.
Were they freed? Oh, God. I don't want to hear this. No, God, don't do it.
In this testing, it was found that a hair matching Stevie Branch's stepfather was found within the knots used to tie up the victims.
Of fucking course it was.
Despite the evidence against the stepfather, persecutors stated that they stood behind their convictions of the West Memphis Three.
So they're still in prison.
Sorry, I have to collect myself here.
Oh, no.
3 years later, after a number of failed attempts, it was ordered that a hearing take place to analyze new evidence to potentially exonerate the three prisoners. After much debate, it was suggested that the hearings be skipped and instead move straight to trials. After much or many negotiations, in 2011, the West Memphis Three were released from prison as part of a plea deal, which meant no trials would be necessary. Sounds like good news, right?
No, because that sucks.
The three entered into an Alford plea. That kind of plea deal would mean they would plead guilty.
God damn it.
While still maintaining their innocence. After all was said and done, the judge sentenced the three to the time they served, which was a total of 18 years and 78 days.
Holy fuck.
Additionally, they were given 10 years of probation, stipulating that if they committed any crimes during that time, they could be sent back to prison for 21 years. Horribly, though, as part of the plea deal, the men were and are unable to pursue any legal action against the state for wrongful imprisonment.
Oh my God.
The West Memphis Three were finally released, but not fully exonerated, as some of the convictions still stand. But the legal team said they would continue to fight for full exoneration, as they do to this day.
Fuck that. What the fuck?
Despite the release of the men known as the West Memphis Three, the murders remain unsolved, and the three men may never receive compensation for false imprisonment, nor be cleared for the crimes, and this is why. As of July of 2021, last month, after Damien Echols' lawyers requested access to crime scene evidence for new DNA testing, they were told that physical evidence for the three victims had been lost, misplaced, or destroyed by fire.
Of course it had.
According to Jason Baldwin's attorney, quote, "We soon found out that the evidence the West Memphis Police Department gathered was in complete disarray, improperly gathered, improperly stored, and worse, crucial evidence that would have proved our client's innocence was missing or ignored."
Oh, God.
"I feel for all of the victims in this case and hope that someday, somehow, justice will be rightfully served for all involved."
God, what the fuck?
And that is the sad and tragic case of the West Memphis Three.
Okay, so I'm going to say that I think I've solved the case of the West Memphis Three, and that the murderer was the stepfather. Piece of shit.
Yeah.
I mean.
And I know your brother-in-law's a cop, but fuck the police in all of these cases that we spoke about today.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
The one thing I was going to remember, talk about celebrities, there were a lot of celebrities that stood up for them.
Good.
Some of the biggest ones were Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, actually recorded a song with Damien Nichols.
Good.
And the other one was Natalie Maines from The Chicks, previously known as The Dixie Chicks.
Yeah. Good. I hope that maybe they raised money. I'm going to donate because holy shit, and see where they are today. It's awful.
Again, I got very emotional, but I fucking believe in this, and I'm so angry about this.
You didn't know any of this before.
They don't deserve it. There are three documentaries about them. All three of them are streaming on HBO Max if you want to get more pissed off.
Oh, God. I don't know. That's awful. Awful. And that's my biggest fear in the world is being falsely accused of a crime. Yeah, I didn't commit. And just having to go to... And you know, you're so desperate to get out of prison, you'll sign anything. And they have to sign that bullshit. Like, oh, I'm going to plead guilty and I'm never going to challenge this case or blah, blah, blah.
Just because... So they wouldn't have...
To be in prison.
Well, not only that, imagine how much compensation they would get for 18 years in prison.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Because each state is different, but it's like thousands per year, you know? I told you.
I'm going to eat my deviled ham spread make me feel better.
I told you you'd get angry. Was I wrong?
I'm so angry. God, they're children. Okay, so believer, skeptic?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so for debunk, y'all, it was so much fun with this post. Okay, I'm changing gears.
Uplift that. Like,
yeah, uplift the shit.
Again, this has been an amazing episode, but it's been hard.
Hard. And that's why I'm going to Screaming Wells, because at least that's lighter. I talked to so many people, and I talked to an older guy there who used to be the sheriff. He actually reached out to me on Facebook Messenger and started messaging me, and I learned so much. So, the screams. There were actually, you can hear the screams. The noise was made, and this is what he said, by the pump jacks when the packing was dry and tight on the polish rods.
I knew it.
So it was just
squeaky
the up
gears.
And down. Yeah, it's the up and down motion making like a.
So the squeaky wheel didn't get the grease in this case.
Shit. Okay, now do your impression of the squeaky wheel.
No. I fucking knew it.
And it was always a different well. And that's why it sounded like it would come from different places, because they rotated the operating times. Well.
I fucking knew it.
Good guess. That was very good. You nailed it. Now the tombs, the concrete tombs, they were just old cement pads for big gas engines. So there, people completely saw them and blew things out of proportion. And he said, I used to be a deputy that made sure kids had a safe ride home from parties out there. Because, of course, people would party out there. Now, as far as all the rituals and stuff, I will say that kids in these small towns, and I was one of them, would do anything for distraction or
clown house that we've talked about in past episodes.
That's written down here, the clown house.
Yeah.
So I could totally 1,000% see these small town kids being bored, go out to the screaming wells, put on a few robes, hold some flashlights, dance in a circle, and hope that people come and see you and scream and freak out.
And let me add on to your debunk there.
Yeah.
Is that when these stories start perpetuating, people will start just fucking with other people just because they know that they're going to get all freaked out and shit. You know, they want to instill fear in other people and laugh about it, you know?
And they might see a naturally dead dog roadkill on the side of the road. But when they tell their friend, it's, I saw this dog, you know, sacrificed out there or something.
Yeah. I couldn't find anything on my town, but I remember specifically there's these hills like maybe a mile from my house that they would always say that stuff would happen back there in the hills. So never go after the sun goes down, you know?
Ooh, moaning hills, orgasming hills. All right, time for Believer.
Again, let me preface this by saying I will be quoting an opinion piece from Boston University by Peter Blake a lot, as I really agree with pretty much everything he says.
Oh, okay.
As always, our references are available on our website. So if you want to know where we got our information from, go to our website. So if you haven't figured it already, I do think that the Satanic Panic was a total scapegoat and frankly, utter fucking bullshit.
Oh, okay.
But I'm the believer here, and I'll explain as to why people believe that it's real.
Well, let me ask you this. You believe, though, that demons and the devil exist, though.
Yeah. But so I don't believe these crimes were committed because of ritualistic stuff.
Got
it. Yeah. It all comes down to trust. Blake says, quote, the Satanic Panic died out because the courts found no evidence and the media eventually stopped covering the rumors. People trusted the courts and media enough to change their beliefs, but today virtually all institutions are eyed with suspicion, unquote. At the time when we didn't have the internet, or more specifically social media, many people came to trust authority and media as their only source of news, you know. Quote, now anyone has the potential to start a viral rumor or pass on false information to a wide social network. Social media provides the oxygen that conspiracies need to thrive, unquote. But back in the 70s and 80s, people were coerced into believing false narratives with leading or rather misleading questions and by word of mouth, you know. Additionally, quote, simply reading about falsehoods, even when noting that they are false, can make misinformation seem true, unquote.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Secondly, when a group of people, Trump supporters, start believing in something collectively, whether true or not, it can to that group of people seem absolutely true.
Absolutely.
That is why the Satanic Panic existed in the past, and that is why QAnon exists today.
Interesting.
As Blake puts it, quote, psychology may never find a way to change the minds of a group of believers. Instead, we may need to do the harder work of talking to one human at a time, unquote.
Interesting.
And as I often say, question everything you know, including authority.
Got it. Nice. Well done. Wow, that was
intense.
That was insane.
Yeah.
That was sad and crazy and wow.
Well, let me...
Yeah. Chris, do you have anything that you may share that might uplift us a little bit?
There's still hope.
Still hope? Oh, really?
That's not for my case.
Oh, no.
It's not even my
case. I thought you were going to give us hope.
Sorry to mislead you, but we have stories in our inbox, but I wanted to end the episode with a little uplifting news. The story comes from 2017. In 1992, Dane and Fran Keller, at the time, were daycare operators in Austin, Texas, who were put in prison for alleged satanic ritual abuse involving their clients. After serving 22 years in prison, they were released in 2013 after a lot of investigative work by journalists and lawyers alike. The couple had not seen each other in over 20 years.
Wow.
In June of the same year, their case was dismissed after being declared innocent. 4 years following their release, they were awarded $3.4 million or $80,000 for each year served from a state fund for false imprisonment. Although no amount of money will ever make up for the years of trauma that the couple has endured, as Fran Keller stated, it means we will actually be free.
Wow. Oh my God.
I know. It's a lot to take in.
Crazy. And we hear like sirens in the background now as that goes on.
Yeah. Whew. That was a good opening to our fifth season.
Yeah.
I think I will toot our horns. I think we did some really good investigative work on this one.
This turned into something like, you know, sometimes you start something and what you finish feels almost otherworldly. Like, so much different than what you thought you had in your brain when you began.
Yeah.
And this felt like one of those episodes.
Yeah.
Like, definitely going to be one of our top five episodes of all time.
I'm super proud of this. And I'm super proud of us for doing 4 years.
Yeah.
And 100 episode, number 100 right here.
100 right here. And we kind of went above and beyond for this episode without even realizing that we were going to.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, that being said, thank you for returning to listen to us. I hope you guys enjoyed that as heavy as it was. We will have some lighter topics coming the way.
Yeah.
We have some one in particular guest that's going to come on the show in September. We won't talk about it now because we want it to be a surprise, but it's fucking exciting.
It's awesome.
If you didn't see our social media posts, we have been, we have been nominated for the first annual Paranormal Podcast Awards through Paranormality Magazine. Vote for us, please. We are up there with some really big, big guys, and we are happy to be alongside those guys.
Yeah, just being nominated is huge.
And being, I know that sounds cliche, but it's true because, you know,
it's true.
After 4 years, we didn't think we'd be here. So this is where we are. So please go vote for us. The link will be in our show notes. And if, as always, you can find us everywhere by searching BSPodPHX on your podcatchers. And if you have any stories, if you have stories about the Satanic Panic or weird occult stories, please send those in.
That would be awesome.
BSPodPHX@gmail.com.
Awesome. And my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, I always mention, as always, on Amazon. I'm working on my fourth novel right now, standalone, and the first draft is almost done.
Yeah. So if you want some coming uplifting literature, do that.
Yes, do that. I encourage everyone to go and just, if you research this, look this up, look up the Satanic Panic. It was a weirdly crazy-ish time. Yeah. Like it was our normal. So I wasn't being a kid there.
Every few years or even decades, there's some kind of scare that comes up this, you know?
That's true.
That being said, everybody, again, thank you for listening. But most of all, take care of yourselves.
Take care
safe
of yourselves.
Get vaccinated, please.
Oh, God, please. Please do that. Yeah. And with that, bye.
See you again next time.